Welcome to Faith Community Church of Indianapolis. We pray that you are blessed by this message from Faith Community Church. To learn more about Faith Community Church, please visit us at fccindianapolis.com.
Well, good morning. My name is Larry Ralph, and I know many of you here today, but there's many that I don't know as well. And my wife Linda and I, we have a long and very storied history here at Faith Community Church. We both love this church with all of our hearts. My history here goes back a long ways. I visited this body before we bought this property. I visited this body of believers while we were at the Eagle Enterprise building over in the Greenwood City Airport. And I eventually became a permanent member here. When we purchased this property from Dr. Deaver in 1978. And Linda's roots and permanent membership go back to around 1982, 1983, I think. And when I say permanent membership here, it's because even if you leave this place never really leaves you. And I've covered so much territory with regards to planting churches and being involved with other bodies. But my roots, my spiritual roots, blossomed right here on this property. And I was watered from a spiritual well that was dug here all those years ago. Before I continue, I'd like to just kind of recognize anyone else that may have been around back at that time. Is there anyone who attended services at the Eagle Enterprise building before we bought this property? Would you just stand up real quickly? Is there anyone else that attended services in our first little barn that we remodeled? I'd like for those people to stand up again, as with everyone. If you ever attended services in the little barn, that's a blessing. You know, when Pastor Chuck called and asked me to speak today, I didn't even hesitate. I said yes immediately because I've spoken here quite a bit in the early days. And it's really like coming home to a place that you've missed for a very, very long time. I remember Pastor Enloe as that truck driver that when Brother Gowd asked him to pray, Pastor Leonard really knew how to pray. And I remember how he prayed. And that was probably the thing that stuck with me early on, was hearing his voice in prayer. And you know, Brother Gowd may have been the first pastor here, but it really always was Pastor Leonard's church from day one. Until God called him home, and now Pastor Chuck is carrying on that legacy now. I have so many awesome memories, memories of friends and family here on this property, and you know, many of them have marched on off into eternity. In fact, just a few months ago, I was here again in this building to celebrate the life of one of my best friends when I was here during my time spent here, and that was Ken Swain. And you know, Pastor Leonard even allowed Ken and I to tag team some Sunday messages here. And I would start the message off, and then Ken would walk forward, and we would high-five each other, and then he would finish the message, or vice versa. So many awesome memories, so many good times, so many pig roasts ago, as Dean was saying. I remember the very first one, and it was out in front of the original little barn. We roasted a whole pig on the first one. That's the last time we ever did that. But we roasted a whole pig on the first one. And Phil Hernley had rigged up a contraption. He had cut a barrel in half and put charcoal in it. And he'd rigged up a contraption where we put the whole hog on in the spit. And I tied it on with farm fencing and chicken wire. And Phil had that thing rigged up where we were cranking it. And it was fine until it started really cooking and it got kind of soft inside. And then with every crank, it would just kind of like fall down into the ashes and we'd pull it back up. And, you know, parts of it got really, really done. And parts of it, I'm not so sure ever were. But anyways, after church, we cut it up, ate it, and loved every bite of it and every minute of the fellowship that was included. So many memories and lives, and even other ministries, have been given life by the spiritual wells that were dug here. I know it's hard for some of you to imagine, but if you could, if there was some way that I could, I would love for you to be able to just open your minds up and see the areas of the world that really are affected and have been touched by the people that have walked through these doors. The spiritual wells that flowed from here and are still flowing from here, the legacy. If you have your Bibles this morning, I'd like you to open up to Genesis 26:18. Genesis 26:18. And Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died. And he gave them the same names that his father had given them. The wells had names. And he gave them the same names that his father had given them. You know, Isaac gave those redug wells those same names. And when I think of the wells that were dug and redug here multiple times, I think of the wells' names. The wells of healing, the wells of salvation, the wells of deliverance, the wells of relationship, the wells of outreach and sacrifice and blessing, the wells of hospitality. This church has always been a hospitality-filled place. The wells of hospitality. The wells of brotherhood and sisterhood and fellowship, and also the wells of prayer as well. This place has always been a place of prayer. When I started thinking about today and the various spiritual wells that have been dug here, God began bringing back to my mind some specific events and services that took place in this church and on this property. And you know, with regards to the spiritual well of prayer, I'm reminded of the original gang of intercessors that began the work here, the men and women who stayed on their knees until something happened. And I remember Sister Ina Stevens, the former Greenwood police chief's wife, who prayed in people from all directions. And she vowed that she wanted to be the very first one to give up her seat if the visitors that came filled every seat in that little barn. And, she prayed it every Sunday, every time she could. She wanted to be the one to give up her seat. And then on Easter of 1979, that happened. And, you know, there were no more chairs left. Her little body was riddled with cancer at that time. But she got up out of her seat for one more visitor and went back and sat on the steps that led up to the loft in that little barn. Others wanted to give theirs up, but in honor of her praying that place full, she was allowed to give her seat up and be the one. I also remember the first 20 years of those Saturday morning men's prayers. Early Saturday morning men's prayers. And the powerful life changes that those early years brought in those meetings. And all the men usually ended up at Cracker Barrel afterwards for breakfast or someplace, but usually it was Cracker Barrel. And I remember Brother Dick Barton always being in trouble with his wife Ruth every Saturday morning because he ordered Mama's pancake breakfast instead of eating her granola. And she had told him every Saturday, "Now, don't do that this Saturday," and of course, you know. He was amongst us men, so we challenged him to make sure he got Mama's pancake breakfast. I also remember Pastor John Wilson, who came a little later on. And we had him at a Cracker Barrel one Saturday morning. He had never ate grits. So all the men sat around the table and watched him intently eating his very first bowl of grits. And I also remember a Saturday morning where all the men chipped in and donated for Dick Andrews. I don't know how many of you remember Dick Andrews, but for Dick Andrews to buy his first set of false teeth. You know, real spiritual stuff. But all kidding aside, there was a well of prayer that was dug here that I believe still exists today. When I walk into this sanctuary, every time, I see things a little differently than some people. I have X-ray vision. Because when I walk into here now, I stand here, and even this morning, I look around and I look beyond the drywall and beyond the insulation, and I look at the tin, the metal that covered this building before the drywall and the insulation. And I see the prayers that were written on those sheets of metal. A bunch of us stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning one night with permanent markers, praying and writing those prayers and blessings on the insides of these walls. Were you to rip off the drywall and pull off the insulation and get down to it, those prayers written in permanent marker are still on the inside sheets of this building, and I believe they're just as effective today as they were the day that they were written. You know, the next day, Orville Fleetwood's buddy's insulation company, I can't remember who it was, began blowing the insulation over those prayers that were written on the walls. And I'll never forget thinking, will that ever be exposed someday? Well, today, 40 years into this thing, I'm telling you they're there. And they're still effective. There was a well of prayer that was dug here. There were also wells of salvation, healing, and deliverance dug here. So many testimonies of people healed, just like Randy Ennis is going to be, and set free. And we had the Southside Outreach concerts and the Cornerstone Jam concerts that were held here on this property as well. And on those Saturday nights, people made commitments at our altars or wherever they were prayed for at the time, and they left bags of pot and pills and cigarettes by their choice after they were prayed for. They just knew that's what they wanted to do. Addicted people have been set free here at these altars and on this property. My Aunt Joanne had confirmed breast cancer, and on a Monday morning she was supposed to go in to have it removed, and they said it had roots and it was deep into her muscle tissues. We prayed for her at this altar on a Sunday morning, and she went in the next morning, and as they were prepping her and doing some more x-rays, it was gone. They couldn't find it. So people have been healed right here at these altars and set free. Deliverance. Deliverance from demon possession and oppression has happened right here at this altar and on this property. I remember one Friday night in 1978, it would have been in October, November, when as my Uncle Lee and I were installing windows on the loft of that little barn building. We were putting storm windows up, and there was a black limo that pulled in the parking lot right up here. At that time, most of the parking lot was gravel. There wasn't all this asphalt, but there was a black limo that pulled up right out here. And out stepped the then mayor of Indianapolis and a young man. And I would later learn that that was his stepson that needed deliverance. And I believe Dr. Mike Elmore and a couple other leaders were waiting in the church for a prayer session with this young man. And as I was mounting that storm window with a Yankee screwdriver on standing on that ladder, I began to hear the prayers of deliverance that were rising up that stairwell. And I felt the power of God so strong that I knew I'd better climb back down that ladder before I fell off of it. So I did just that. And you know, that young man walked into our little church barn with one countenance on his face. And he left this property with an entirely different look on his face. He was delivered. And out of respect to what God had done here that moment, Lee and I, we waited to finish installing the windows until the next day. Just couldn't do it. Those are the kinds of healings and deliverance that I know have happened here and in Jesus' name are going to happen, that have been happening and are going to be happening again. I believe what you said, Chuck. I believe God's doing something here. I believe it with all my heart. I sensed it this morning again. I sensed it at Ken's funeral and I sensed it again this morning. I believe it with all my heart. Don't ever give up. Ever, ever, ever give up. Salvations, wells of salvations, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds over the past 40 years. The crowd here may not tell it, but I'm telling you it's the truth. It's the absolute truth. Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, Wednesday nights, nights at the coffee house, concerts, friends. I remember when entire families have come forward at times to learn about, accept, and start their Christian journeys right here. Wells. Doug Wells. Spiritual wells of salvation, healing, and deliverance. Also wells of fellowship. Wells of fellowship, relationship, and outreach were dug and redug here. Wells of outreach. Linda and I, in Haiti, we have 12 churches, 10 schools, and almost 4,000 kids in our programs there, in one form or another. And Nona and I, as well as Linda and I, have taken in short-term missionaries with us on some of our short-term trips, starting with some of the trips from this church, for over 30 years now. And you know, we get calls and letters and emails from some of those people who tell us that it was in Haiti, on that concrete roof in Haiti, on a missions trip, that they realized what God wanted them to do. And now some of those who have traveled with us and got their call, their spark, their confirmation on a mission trip with us are now ministering themselves in churches here in the States and several places, Brazil, Japan, Indonesia, Ireland, and many other places too that we don't even know about. We get those phone calls. But you know what none of them realize is that they have ties to Faith Community Church as well. They have ties to you as well, those that have maintained and persevered and kept the faith. Because it's here on this property that we drank from that well and were able to minister to them. And now they are ministering elsewhere. The blessings, the ties, the outreach that this church has had is untold. I wish I could tell that story. I wish I knew the magnitude of it. And I promise you it's there. Dale and Sandy Bow in Chile. Scott and Bridget Bogard in Costa Rica. Matt and Amy Kroll with YWAM, which has affected so many thousands of others. So many ministries were birthed right here out of Faith Community's wells. And mission trips with us to Haiti starting off. In fact, if Marge promises to forgive me, I'm going to tell a story that happened on one of those trips to share. Well, I'm going to tell it anyway. She's had to forgive me so much over the past 40 years that one more won't hurt. You see, it was Marge's first mission trip into Haiti, a third world country. Pretty scary stuff. Sleeping on cots, on steel cots, in a concrete room with no lights or electricity. Pretty prehistoric almost. On her first trip, there in the middle of the night, she got up to go to the bathroom because we were all sleeping together in big concrete rooms. And on her way back to get into the cot, as she was leaning over, she felt a big old spider squish under her foot. And she said she crawled back in bed because it was totally dark and just covered herself up and laid there. And as she was laying there, she convinced herself that she had just stepped on a poisonous spider in this third world country, in this third world almost godforsaken country, and would probably just pass out and die in her sleep. But to figure out what had actually happened, she would have had to wake everyone up and look around at the remains of that poisonous spider. Well, she didn't sleep much the rest of the night, thinking every moment was her last. And eventually daylight broke and Pastor Leonard was in the cot right, she was in one against the wall and he was in the cot right against her, up on the wall. And Pastor Leonard was getting out of his cot beside her as she began telling him this horrible event of the night. Pastor Leonard, in a bit of a groggy state because he hadn't had his coffee yet, just looked at her and said, "Really?" Then he put his glasses on. He looked over down by her cot and he scooped up that spider's remains. And it seemed a little weird, but he smelled them. Then he looked at Marge and despairingly said, "Marge, you dropped two of your raisins you were eating before you went to sleep last night." That story went on to become mission legend as Leonard told it every chance he got of Marge's near-death experience from the raisin spiders in Haiti. And now wells of fellowship and relationship. So many people. So many families. I mean, I literally could go on for hours and hours and hours. I told Pastor Chuck I wanted to keep it sweet and short, but I could go on for hours about the times and the relationships that we had here. And a lot of stories. I wish some of them were around because there's some I'd really like to tell. But I won't. And I could name a lot of families. So many families here. Hundreds. But I won't do that either. I will name a few that were here and that were a part of that first 20 years. The Ralphs, the Trustees, the Enlows, the Elmores, the Brickers, the Greens, the Swains, the Keys, the Millers, the Ennises, Mike, Cindy, Jack, Eva, the Fentons, the Nordbys, the Wilsons, the Redpaths, the Shively's, the Buckers, the Mosiers, the Ennises, Randy and Peggy, the Hughes, as well as Randy and Peggy's parents, the Hughes, the Selkies, the Fradys, the Gerald's, the Bartons, the Sickles, the Richardsons, the Skaggs, the Davises, the Snodgrasses, the Bogards, the Williams, the Ruarks, and so many more in that first 20 years. And as I was thinking about it the other night and writing some of them down, I was thinking each of those families and the things they did here and the participation that we had and the fellowship we had and the connection that we had. And I know in the past 20 years that I haven't been here. There's been so many more that I couldn't even begin to imagine or to name them. So many families, so much history, so many stories, and so many pig roasts. So much time spent building this special place physically and spiritually. I remember myself, Lloyd Spears, Ronnie Bricker, and the Trusty Boys. They'll always be known as the Trusty Boys to me, even if we make it to 80 or 90 or 100 years old, you're always going to be the Trusty Boys to me. And other men, we stood up all night long installing the rough sawn plywood and covering the metal beams in that first building over there, or the second building over there. And I remember also one men's prayer breakfast. Leonard was talking about and was upset about the rabbits eating his garden. And Pastor Leonard and Marge had already moved on over to Front Royal Drive at the house over there, and the Wilsons, Pastor John Wilson and his family, were living in the parsonage. And at the breakfast table at Cracker Barrel, we conspired with Pastor Leonard to take care of his rabbit problem. So that night, myself, Greg Key, Ken Swain, and Ed Kroll, we drove up the driveway and parked back behind the building. We didn't want our headlights to flash out in the back there where his garden was, because Leonard still had a garden here for a while after he moved over there. But we drove up, we hid back there because we didn't want to spook the rabbits off. And we all had these very dim head flash lamps that had red lenses on them so we wouldn't spook the rabbits. And a couple air rifles and a couple BB guns. You know, big time stuff. So we snuck over to Pastor Leonard's garden, saw two rabbits. It was late at night, saw two rabbits, quickly disposing of one of them. And the other one hopped off underneath that big old pine or cedar tree, whatever it was, spruce tree that used to be over there, and in the backyard behind the house. Well, by this time, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. And we knew that no one was up at the parsonage. So we walked towards that pine tree and started circling around it. And all of a sudden, Pastor John jumps out from the other side with a baseball bat fully loaded and ready to swing. He was ready to swing and just take our heads off. And we didn't know for that split second whether to shoot him with our air rifles and BB guns or to tuck tail and run. Thank God, though, even though it was dark, we quickly recognized each other and dropped our weapons. Pastor John had been at the breakfast table that morning at Cracker Barrel, but he hadn't heard our conversation with Pastor Leonard about the big rabbit hunt and Pastor Leonard's plan for saving his green beans. You know, from that day forward, we always teased Pastor John about bringing a baseball bat to an air rifle fight. The fun, the blood, the sweat, and the tears, the fellowship, the kinship groups that we had. You know, today, I'm in various churches for various reasons because of the mission, or even at Menards or Walmart or wherever, and I'll meet someone from that first 20 years here at Faith. And I can tell you those same fires of fellowship are still burning. Some of them I may not see for 10 or 15 years, or I may not see for 5 years or whatever, but the minute our eyes make contact, it's like, I remember. I remember that well. I remember that place that had all those wells. I remember where I drank from. This place was and is so special to so many people. Eternal relationships. Bonds with cords that cannot be broken. My friends, my friendships with so many people from here are eternal and special. Wells, dug wells, spiritual wells of outreach and friendship and fellowship. Now I got one more well I want to talk about. A well of legacy. And you all that are here and have maintained and have kept those fires burning, waiting for what is about to happen, have a legacy that I want to make sure you know you understand. The spiritual well of legacy. Again, if you have your Bibles, turn to Hebrews 11, the big faith chapter. Hebrews 11, 13 through 23. Hebrews 11, 13. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they'd left, they would have had an opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned," Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. So in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau with regards to their future. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning even the burial of his bones. By faith, Moses' parents had hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. You are not ordinary children. You're not ordinary children. You have stayed here. You've kept the faith. You've continued the legacy. As I said earlier about Ken Swain, I have so many memories of people here and the spiritual wells, all of those spiritual wells that I have drank from and been blessed by. I remember Pastor Leonard saying early on, at almost every single service, Leonard would say, "Hey, if you want to say you've seen a miracle, if you want to be a part of a miracle, all you have to do is just hang around this place. Just show up and you're going to see a bona fide miracle." And he was right. We did hang around this place. And I've lived long enough to tell you that it is a miracle. And as he put it, it was and is a bona fide miracle. This place had a well of spiritual legacy dug here that all of us in this building this morning, as well as countless others, have drank from and been blessed by. The well of legacy birthed here, and what has happened here, and what is about to happen again and continue and get greater, what is about to come, it also birthed many Hebrews 11 style champions that are not with us anymore. And I remember them all fondly. Now, in a little bit, I'm going to close with this because I said I'd keep it short and sweet. This morning, I've talked quite a bit about what happened here. And now I want to talk about quickly what I believe is happening and about to happen. Now, Satan would tell you that all this well digging and redigging stuff was great when you were young, but you're old now. The church is too old. People are too old. That's what Satan would tell you. And the world will tell you, yeah, but no one really cares about God's plans anymore. And the apostate church will tell you that God doesn't do those things anymore. Many would say, yes, but people and culture has changed and none of that works these days. And you know what? To some extent, I'll agree. Our new wine is not meant for old wineskins. But you really don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I believe some things and methods and some of that does need to change. However, I also believe that the church, the body of Christ, all of us should be changing culture and not culture changing us. You know, cute little videos and catchy phrases and Christianese verbal skills and phone apps will never replace the pursuit of God or ever replace the power of the risen Christ or a changed life. Now, I've watched this church from day one dig and redig those wells as they needed to be dug again. And even in the past 20 years, from a distance, with a loving heart, I've watched and heard about how so many of you have kept your hands to the plow here and continued to plant and water and redig the wells. Today I say, bless you for that. Bless you for that. You may never really know or understand who drank from the wells that were dug here and the wells that you've maintained. You may never get that. Or what they received, or where they went with it. It's a real encouragement to Linda and I to know that you have never given up. Neither have we. It's always easier to cap a well than to dig it or to redig it. It's always easier to give up than to march forward. Always. But today, I'm challenging you today to redig and dig some of those wells. Some of those wells that have blessed so many, including me, from this church. You know, some may need to be redug, and maybe some new ones need to be dug that have never existed before. Maybe it's even the wells that should be springing forth from our own hearts. I know that quite often I need to redig a few wells in my own heart. Wells of compassion and mercy and forgiveness. Wells of blessing. Wells of relationship and salvation. And you know, I also know anytime you get a body of believers together this size, I can guarantee you that there are wells that need to be dug. This morning, if anything that was done or said touched a part of your heart or ministry or your life that needs to be redug, I would ask you, I would beg you, to grab a shovel and redig, reopen, and renew that thing before we leave the building today. I love you all. I love this church. God bless you all.